You did this at his desk, and on seeing it he looked up in considerable surprise. He'd expected a Bible, but this one must have cost hundreds of American dollars. It was an edition of the King James Version in beautifully literate Mandarin, and magnificently illustrated. Yu stood and walked around the desk to embrace his Italian colleague.
"May the Lord Jesus bless you for this, Renato," Yu said, with no small emotion.
"We both serve him as best we can. I thought of it, and it seemed something you might wish to have," Danilo replied, as he might to a good parish priest in Rome. "For that was what you was, wasn't it?"
"Close enough, certainly."
For his part, Barry Wise cursed that he hadn't quite gotten his camera running for that moment. "We don't often see Catholics and Baptists this friendly," the reporter observed. Yu handled the answer, and this time the camera was rolling.
"We are allowed to be friends.
We work for the same boss, as you say, in America." He took Demilo's hand again and shook it warmly. He rarely received so sincere a gift, and it was so strange to get it here in Beijing from what some of his American colleagues called papists, and an Italian one at that. Life really did have purpose after all. Reverend Yu had sufficient faith that he rarely doubted that, but to have it confirmed from time to time was a blessing. The contractions came too fast and too hard. Lianhua withstood it as long as she could, but after an hour it felt as though someone had fired a rifle into her belly. Her knees buckled. She did her best to control it, to remain standing, but it was just too much. Her face turned pasty white, and she collapsed to the cement floor. A co-worker was there at once. A mother herself, she knew what she beheld.
"It is your time?" she asked.
"Yes,"
delivered with a gasp and a painful nod.
"Let me run and get Quan."
And she was off at once. That bit of help was when things went bad for Lotus Flower. Her supervisor noted one running employee, and then turned his head to see another prostrate one. He walked over, as one might to see what had happened after an automobile accident, more with curiosity than any particular desire to intervene. He'd rarely taken note of young Lianhua. She performed her function reliably, with little need for chiding or shouting, and was popular with her co-workers, and that was all he knew about her, really, and all that he figured he needed to know. There was no blood about. She hadn't fallen from some sort of accident or mechanical malfunction. How strange. He stood over her for a few seconds, seeing that she was in some discomfort and wondering what the problem was. But he wasn't a doctor or a medic, and didn't want to interfere. Oh, if she'd been bleeding, he might have tried to slap a bandage over the wound or something. But this wasn't such a situation, and so he just stood there, as he figured a manager should, showing that he was there, but not making things worse. There was a medical orderly in the first aid room 200 meters away. The other girl had probably run that way to fetch her, he thought. Lianhua's face contorted after a few minutes' relative peace, as another contraction began. He saw her eyes screw closed and her face go pale, and her breathing change to a rapid pant.
"Oh," he realized, "that's it. How odd."
He was supposed to know about such things, so that he could schedule substitutions on the line. Then he realized something else. This was not an authorized pregnancy. Lianhua had broken the rules, and that wasn't supposed to happen. And it could reflect badly on his department and on him as a supervisor. And he wanted to own an automobile someday.
"What is happening here?" he asked her.
but Yang Lianhua was in no shape to reply at the moment. The contractions were accelerating much faster than they'd done with Zhulong. "Why couldn't this have waited until Saturday?" she demanded of Destiny. "Why does God wish my child to die aborning?" She did her best to pray through the pain, doing her utmost to concentrate, to entreat God for mercy and help in this time of pain and trial and terror. But all she saw around her was more cause for fear. There was no help in the face of her shop supervisor. Then she heard running feet again and looked to see Quan approaching. But before he got to her, the supervisor intercepted him. "What goes on here?" the man demanded, with all the harshness of petty authority. "Your woman makes a baby here? An unauthorized baby?" the most minor of officials asked and accused in the same breath. "Zhuhai," he added. "Bitch." For his part, Quan wanted this baby as well. He hadn't told his wife of the fears that he'd shared with her, because he felt that it would have been unmanly. But that last statement from the shop supervisor was a little too much for a man under two kinds of simultaneous stress. Recalling his army training, Quan struck out with his fist, following his hand with an imprecation of his own. "Puck guy," literally, "fall down in the street." But in context, "get the fuck out of my way." The shop supervisor gashed his head when he went down, giving Quan the satisfaction of seeing an injury to avenge the insult to his wife. But he had other things to do. With the words said and the blow struck, he lifted Lianhua to her feet and supported her as best he could on the way to where their bicycles were parked. But now what to do? Like his wife, Quan had wanted this all to happen at home, where at the worst she could call in sick. But he had no more power to stop this process than he did to stop the world from turning on its axis. She didn't even have time or energy to curse fate. He had to deal with reality as it came, one shaky second at a time, and help his beloved wife as best he could. "You were educated in America?" Wise asked, in front of the rolling camera.
"Yes," Yu replied over tea. "At Oral Roberts University in Oklahoma. My first degree was in electrical engineering. Then my divinity degree and my ordination came later."
"I see you are married," the reporter observed, pointing to a picture on the wall.
"My wife is away in Taiwan, looking after her mother, who is sick at the moment," he explained.
"So how did you two meet?" Wise asked, meaning you and the Cardinal.
"That was Fa An's doing," the Cardinal explained. "It was he who came to us to extend a greeting to a newcomer in the same line of work, one could say."
Demilo was tempted to say that they enjoyed drinks together, but refrained for fear of demeaning the man before his fellow Baptists, some of whom objected to alcohol in any form.
"As you might imagine, there are not so many Christians in this city, and what few there are need to stick together."
"Do you find it odd, a Catholic and a Baptist, to be so friendly?"
"Not at all," Yu replied at once. "Why should it be odd? Are we not united by faith?"
Demilo nodded agreement at this perfect, if unanticipated, statement of belief. "And what of your congregation?" Wise asked the Chinese minister next. The bicycle lot outside was a confused mass of metal and rubber, for few of the Chinese workers owned automobiles. But as Quan helped Lianhua to the far corner, the two of them were spotted by someone who did have access to one. He was a factory security guard who drove about the perimeter of the plant very importantly in his three-wheel motorized cart, an accessory more important to his sense of status than his uniform and badge. Like Quan, a former sergeant in the People's Liberation Army, He'd never lost his feeling of personal authority, and this communicated itself in the way he spoke to people. "Stop!" he called from the driver's seat in his cart. "What goes on here?" Quan turned. Lianhua had just been hit with another contraction, with buckled knees and gasping breath, and he was almost dragging her to their bikes. Suddenly he knew that this wasn't going to work. There was just no way that she could pedal her own bike. It was 11 blocks to their apartment. He could probably drag her up the 3 flights of steps, but how the hell was he going to get her to the front door?
"My wife is... she's hurt," Quan said, unwilling, afraid, to explain what the problem really was.
He knew this guard. His name was Zhou Jingjin, and he seemed a decent enough chap.
"I'm trying to get her home."
"Where do you live, comrade?" Zhou asked.
"Great Long March Apartments, number 74, Quan replied. "Can you help us?"
Zhou looked them over. The woman seemed to be in some distress. His was not a country which placed great value on personal initiative, but she was a comrade in difficulty, and there was supposed to be solidarity among the people. And their apartment was only 10 or 11 blocks, hardly 15 minutes even in this slow and awkward cart. He made his decision based on socialist worker solidarity.
"Load her on the back, comrade."
"Thank you, comrade." And Quan got his wife there, lifted her bottom up, and set her on the rusted steel deck behind the driver's compartment. With a wave he signaled Zhou to head west. This contraction proved a difficult one. Lianhua gasped and then cried out, through the distress of her husband, and worse, the distress of the driver, who turned and saw what ought to have been a healthy woman grasping her abdomen in great pain. It was not a pretty thing to see by any stretch of the imagination, and Zhou, having taken one leap of initiative, decided that maybe he ought to take another. The path to Great Long March Apartments led down Meishuguan Street, past the Longfu Hospital, and like most Beijing teaching hospitals, this one had a proper emergency receiving room. This woman was in distress, and she was a comrade, like himself a member of the working class, and she deserved his help. He looked back. Quan was doing his best to comfort his woman as a man should, far too busy to do much of anything as the security cart bumped along the uneven streets at 20 kilometers per hour. Yes, Zhou decided, he had to do it. He turned the steering tiller gently, pulled up to the loading dock designed more for delivery trucks than ambulances, and stopped. It took Quan a few seconds to realize that they'd stopped. He looked around, ready to help his wife off the cart, until he saw that they weren't at the apartment complex. Disoriented by the previous 30 minutes of unexpected emergency and chaos, he didn't understand, didn't grasp where they were, until he saw someone in a uniform emerge from the door. She wore a white bandana hat on her head. A nurse? Were they at the hospital? No, he couldn't allow that. Yang Quan stood off the cart and turned to Zhou. He started to object that they'd come to the wrong place, that he didn't want to be here. But the hospital workers had an unaccustomed sense of industry at the moment. The emergency room was perversely idle at the moment, and a wheeled gurney emerged from the door with 2 men in attendance. Yang Quan tried to object, but he was merely pushed aside by the burly attendants as Lianhua was loaded on the gurney and wheeled inside before he could do much more than flap his mouth open and closed. He took a breath and rushed in, only to be intercepted by a pair of clerks asking for the information they needed to fill out their admitting forms, stopping him dead in his tracks as surely as a man with a loaded rifle, but far more ignominiously. In the emergency room itself, a physician and a nurse watched as the orderlies loaded Lianhua onto an examining table. It didn't take more than a few seconds for their trained eyes to make the first guess, which they shared with a look. Only a few seconds more, and her work clothes had been removed, and the pregnant belly was as obvious as a sunrise. It was similarly obvious that young Lien Hua was in frank labor, and that this was no emergency. She could be wheeled to the elevator and taken to the second floor, where there was a sizable obstetric staff. The physician, a woman, beckoned to the orderlies and told them where to move the patient. Then she walked to the phone to call upstairs and tell them that a delivery was on the way up. With that work done, the doctor went back to the physician's lounge for a smoke and a magazine. Comrade Young, another clerk, a more senior one, said.
Yes,
the worried husband replied, still stuck in the waiting room, held prisoner by clerks. Your wife is being taken upstairs to obstetrics. But, the clerk added, there's one problem.
What is that?
Juan asked, knowing the answer, but hoping for a miracle, and utterly trapped by the bureaucratic necessities of the moment. We have no record of your wife's pregnancy in our files. You are in our health district. We show you at number 72 Great Long March Flats, is that correct?
Yes,
that's where we live, Juan sputtered out, trying to find a way out of this trap, but not seeing one anywhere. Ah, the clerk nodded. I see. Thank you. I must now make a telephone call. It was the way the last statement was delivered that frightened Quan. Ah, yes, I have to see that the trash is removed properly. Ah, yes, the glass is broken, and I'll try to find a repairman. Ah, yes, an unauthorized pregnancy. I'll call upstairs so that they'll know to kill the baby when it crowns. Upstairs, Lien Hua could see the difference in their eyes. When Zhulong had been on his way, there had been joy and anticipation in the eyes of the nurses who oversaw her labor. You could see their eyes crinkle with smiles at the corners of their masks. But not this time. Someone had come over to where she was in labor room number 3 and said something to the nurse, and her head had turned rapidly to where Lien Hua lay, and her eyes had turned from compassionate to something else. And while Mrs. Yang didn't know what other thing it was, she knew the import. It might not be something the nurse particularly liked, but it was something she would assist in doing, because she had to. China was a place where people did the things they had to do, whether they approved it or liked it or not. Lien Hua felt the next contraction. The baby in her uterus was trying to be born, not knowing that it was racing to its own destruction at the hands of the state. But the hospital staffers knew. Before, with Zhulong, they'd been close by, not quite hovering, but close enough to watch and see that things were going well. Not now. Now they withdrew, desiring not to hear the sounds of a mother struggling to bring forth death in a small package. On the first floor it was equally plain to young Quan. What came back to him now was his firstborn son, Zhulong, the feel of his small body in his arms, the little noises he made, the first smile, sitting up, crawling, the first step in their small apartment, the first words he'd spoken. But their little, large dragon was dead now, never to be seen again, crushed by the wheel of a passenger bus. An uncaring fate had ripped that child from his arms and cast him aside like a piece of blowing trash on the street. And now the state was going to slay his second child. And it would all happen upstairs, less than 10 meters away, and he couldn't do a thing about it. It was a feeling not unknown to citizens of the People's Republic, where rule from above was the rule. But opposed to it now was the most fundamental of human drives. The two forces battled within the mind of factory worker Yang Quan. His hands shook at his sides as his mind struggled with the dilemma. His eyes strained, staring at nothing closer than the room's wall, but straining even so,
Something. There had to be something. There was a pay telephone, and he did have the proper coins, and he did remember the number. And so young Quan lifted the receiver and dialed the number, unable to find the ability within himself to change fate, but hoping to find that ability in another.
"I'll get it," Reverend Yu said in English, rising and walking to where it was ringing.
"A remarkable guy, isn't he?" Wise asked the two Catholics.
"A fine man," Cardinal de Milo agreed. "A good shepherd for his flock, and that is all a man can hope to be."
Monsignor Shepka's head turned when he caught the tone of Yu's voice. Something was wrong here, and by the sound, something serious. When the minister returned to the sitting room, his face told the tale.
"What is amiss?" Shepka asked in his perfect Mandarin. Perhaps this was not something for the American reporters.
"One of my congregation," Yu replied, as he reached for his jacket. "She is pregnant, in labor even now. But her pregnancy is unauthorized, and her husband fears the hospital will try to kill it. I must go to help."
"Franz, was gibt's ja?" de Milo asked in German. The Jesuit then replied in Attic Greek to make damn sure the Americans wouldn't get it.
"You've been told about this, Eminence," Monsignor Shepka explained in the language of Aristotle. "The abortionists here commit what is virtually murder in any civilized country in the world, and the decision to do so in this case is purely political and ideological. You wishes to go and help the parents prevent this vile act."
De Milo needed less than a second. He stood and turned his head. "Fa'an?"
"Yes, Renato."
"May we come with you and assist? Perhaps our diplomatic status will have practical value," His Eminence said, in badly accented but comprehensible Mandarin. It didn't take long for Reverend Yu either.
"Yes, a fine idea. Renato, I cannot allow this child to die."
If the desire to procreate is the most fundamental known to mankind, then there are few more powerful calls to action for an adult than child in danger. For this, men race into burning buildings and jump into rivers. For this now, three clergymen would go to a community hospital to challenge the power of the world's most populous nation.
"What's happening?" Wise asked, surprised by the sudden shifts in language and the way the three churchmen had leapt to their feet.
"A pastoral emergency. A member of Yu's congregation is in the hospital. She needs him, and we will go with our friend to assist in his pastoral duties," de Milo said. The cameras were still running, but this was the sort of thing that got edited out. But what the hell, Wise thought.
"Is it far? Can we help? Want us to run you over?"
Yu thought it over and quickly decided that he couldn't make his bike go as fast as the American news van.
"That is very kind, yes."
"Well, let's go then."
Wise stood and motioned to the door. His crew broke down their gear in a matter of seconds and beat them all out the door. Longfu Hospital turned out to be less than 2 miles away, facing a north-south street. It was, Wise thought, a place designed by a blind architect, so lacking in aesthetic as to be a definite government-owned building even in this country. The communists had probably killed off anyone with a sense of style back in 1950 or so, and no one had attempted to take his place. Like most reporters, the CNN team came in the front door in the manner of a police SWAT team. The cameraman's tool was up on his shoulder, with the sound man beside him, Barry Wise and the producer trailing while they looked for good establishing shots. To call the lobby dreary was generous. A Mississippi State prison had a better atmosphere than this, to which was added the disinfectant smell that makes dogs cringe in the vet's office and made kids hug your neck harder for fear of the coming needle. For his part, Barry Wise was unnaturally alert. He called it his marine training, though he'd never seen combat operations. But one January night in Baghdad,
He'd started looking out the windows 40 minutes before the first bombs had fallen from the stealth fighters, and kept looking until what U.S. Air Force planners had called the AT&T building took the first spectacular hit. He took the producer's arm and told him to keep his head up. The other ex-Marine nodded agreement. For him, it was the suddenly grim looks on the faces of the three clergymen, who'd been so genial until the phone had rung. For that old Italian guy to look this way, it had to be something, they both were sure. And whatever it was, it wouldn't be pleasant. And that often made for a good news story. And they were only seconds from their satellite uplink. Like hunters hearing the first rustle of leaves in the forest, the four CNN men looked alertly for the game and the shot. "Reverend Yu," Young Kwan called, walking, almost running to where they were.
"Eminence, this is my parishioner, Mr. Young."
"Buongiorno," DeMilo said in polite greeting. He looked over to see the newsies taking their pictures and keeping out of the way, more politely than he'd expected them to do. While Yu spoke with Young, he walked over to Barry Wise to explain the situation. "You are right to observe that relations between the Catholics and the Baptists are not always as friendly as they ought to be. But on this issue we stand as one. Upstairs the officials of this government wish to kill a human baby. Yu wants to save that child. Franz and I will try to help."
"This could get messy, sir," Wise warned. "The security personnel in this country can play rough. I've seen it before."
DeMilo was not an imposing man in physical terms. He was short and a good 30 pounds overweight, the American figured. His hair was thinning. His skin was sagging with age. He probably went out of breath going up 2 flights of stairs. But for all that, the Cardinal summoned what manhood he had and transformed himself before the American's eyes. The genial smile and gentle disposition evaporated like steam in cold air. Now he looked more like a general on a battlefield.
"The life of an innocent child is at risk, Signore Wise," was all DeMilo said, and it was all he had to say.
The Cardinal walked back to his Chinese colleague.
"Get that?" Wise asked his cameraman, Pete Nichols.
"Fucking A, Barry," the guy said behind his eyepiece. Yang pointed. "You headed that way." DeMilo and Shepka followed. At the reception desk, the head clerk lifted a phone and made a call. The CNN crew followed the others into the stairwell and headed up to the second floor. If anything, the obstetrics and gynecology floor was even more drab than the first. They heard the shouts, cries, and moans of women in labor, because in China the public health system did not waste drugs on women giving birth. Wise caught up to see that Yang guy, the father of the baby, standing still in the corridor, trying to identify the cries of his own wife from all the others. Evidently he failed. Then he walked to the nurse's desk. Wise didn't need to understand Chinese to get what the exchange was all about. Yang was supported by Reverend Yu and demanded to know where his wife was. The head nurse asked what the hell they were doing here, and told them all that they had to leave at once. Yang, his back straight with dignity and fear, refused and repeated his question. Again the head nurse told him to get lost. Then Yang seriously broke the rules by reaching across the high countertop and grabbing the nurse. You could see it in her eyes. It shocked her at a very fundamental level that anyone could defy her state-issued authority so blatantly. She tried to back away, but his grip was too strong. And for the first time she saw that his eyes were no longer a display of fear. Now they showed pure killing rage, because for Yang, human instincts had cast aside all the societal conditioning he'd absorbed in his 36 years. His wife and child were in danger, and for them, right here and right now, he'd face a fire-breathing dragon barehanded and be damned to the consequences. The nurse took the easy way out and pointed to the left. Yang headed that way, you and the other two clergy with him, and the CNN crew trailing.
The nurse felt her neck and coughed to get her breath back, still too surprised to be fearful, trying to understand how and why her orders had been disregarded. Yang Mianhua was in labor room number 3. The walls were of yellow glazed brick, the floor tile of some color that had been overcome by years of use and was now a brown-gray. For Lotus Flower, it had been a nightmare without end. Alone, all alone in this institution of life and death, she'd felt the contraction strengthen and merge into one continuous strain of her abdominal muscles, forcing her unborn child down the birth canal, toward a world that didn't want it. She'd seen that in the nurses' faces, the sorrow and resignation, what they must have seen and felt elsewhere in the hospital when death came to take a patient. They'd all learned to accept it as inevitable, and they tried to step away from it, because what had to be done was so contrary to all human instincts that the only way they could be there and see it happen was to be somewhere else. Even that didn't work, and though they scarcely admitted it even to one another, they'd go home from work and lie in their beds and weep bitterly at what they as women had to do to newborns. Some would cradle the dead children who never were, who never got to take that first life-affirming breath, trying to show womanly gentleness to someone who would never know about it, except perhaps the spirits of the murdered babies who might have lingered close by. Others went the other way, tossing them into bins like the trash the state said they were. But even they never joked about it, in fact, never talked about it, except perhaps to note it had to be done, or maybe, "There's a woman in number 4 who needs the shot." Lianhua felt the sensations, but worse knew the thoughts, and her mind cried out to God for mercy. Was it so wrong to be a mother, even if she attended a Christian church? Was it so wrong to have a second child to replace the first that fate had ripped from her arms? Why did the state deny to her the blessing of motherhood? Was there no way out? She hadn't killed the first child, as many Chinese families did. She hadn't murdered her little large dragon with his sparkling black eyes and comical laugh and grasping little hands. Some other force had taken that away from her, and she needed another. Just one other. She wasn't being greedy. She didn't want to raise 2 more children, only one. Only one to suckle at her breasts and smile at her in the mornings. She needed that. She worked hard for the state, asked little in return, but she didn't ask for this. It was her right as a human being, wasn't it? But now she knew only despair. She tried to reverse the contractions to stop the delivery from happening, but she might as well have tried to stop the tide with a shovel. Her little one was coming out. She could feel it. She could see the knowledge of it in the face of the delivery nurse. She checked her watch and leaned out of the room, waving her arm just as Lianhua fought the urge to push and complete the process, and so offer up her child to death. She fought, controlled her breathing, struggled with her muscles, panted instead of breathing deeply, fought and fought and fought. But it was all for nothing. She knew that now. Her husband was nowhere near to protect her. He'd been man enough to put her here, but not enough to protect her and his own child from what was happening now. With despair came relaxation. It was time. She recognized the feeling from before. She could not fight anymore. It was time to surrender. The doctor saw the nurse wave. This one was a man. It was easier on the men, and so they gave most of the shots in this hospital. He took the 50cc syringe from stores and then went to the medication closet, unlocking it and withdrawing the big bottle of formaldehyde. He filled the syringe, not bothering to tap out the bubbles, because the purpose of this injection was to kill, and any special care was superfluous. He walked down the corridor toward labor number 3. He'd been on duty for 9 hours that day. He'd performed a difficult and successful cesarean section a few hours before. and now he'd end his working day with this. He didn't like it. He did it because it was his job, part of the state's policy. The foolish woman having a baby without permission. It really was her fault, wasn't it? She knew what the rules were. Everyone did. It was impossible not to know. But she'd broken the rules, and she wouldn't be punished for it. Not really her. She wouldn't go to prison or lose her job or suffer a monetary fine. She'd just get to go home with her uterus the way it had been 9 months before. Empty. She'd be a little older and a little wiser, and know that if this happened again, it was a lot better to have the abortion done in the second or third month, before you got too attached to the damn thing. Damn sure it was a lot more comfortable than going through a whole labor for nothing. That was sad, but there was much sadness in life, and for this part of it, they'd all volunteered. The doctor had chosen to become a doctor, and the woman in number 3 had chosen to become pregnant. He came into number 3 wearing his mask because he didn't want to give the woman any infection. That was why he used a clean syringe in case he should slip and stick her by mistake. So. He sat on the usual stool that obstetricians used both for delivering babies and for aborting the late-term ones. The procedure they used in America was a little more pleasant. Just poke into the baby's skull, suck the brains out, crush the skull, and deliver the package with a lot less trouble than a full-term fetus. And a lot easier on the woman. He wondered what the story was on this one, but there was no sense in knowing, was there? No sense knowing that which you can't change. So. He looked. She was fully dilated and effaced, and yes, there was the head. Hairy little thing. Better give her another minute or two, so that after he did his duty, she could expel the fetus in one push and be done with it. Then she could go off and cry for a while and start getting over it. He was concentrating a little too much to note the commotion in the corridor outside the labor room. Young pushed the door open himself. And there it all was, for all of them to see. Lianhua was on the delivery table. Quan had never seen one of them before. And the way it held a woman's legs up and apart, it looked for all the world like a device to make women easier to rape. His wife's head was back and down, not up and looking to see her child born, and then he saw why. There was the doctor, was he? And in his hand a large needle full of... They were in time. Yang Quan pushed the doctor aside off his stool. He darted right to his wife's face. I am here. Reverend Yu came with me, Lian. It was like a light coming on in a darkened room. Quan! Lian Hua cried out, feeling her need to push, and finally wanting to. But then things became more complicated still. The hospital had its own security personnel. But on being alerted by the clerk in the main lobby, one of them called for the police, who, unlike the hospital's own personnel, were armed. Two of them appeared in the corridor, surprised, first of all, to see foreigners with TV equipment right there in front of them. Ignoring them, they pushed into the delivery room to find a pregnant woman about to deliver, a doctor on the floor, and 4 men, 2 of them foreigners as well. "What goes on here?" the senior one bellowed, since intimidation was a major tool for controlling people in the PRC. "These people are interfering with my duties," the doctor answered with a shout of his own. If he didn't act fast, the damn baby would be born and breathe. And then he couldn't... "What?" the cop demanded of him. "This woman has an unauthorized pregnancy, and it is my duty to terminate the fetus now. These people are in my way. Please remove them from the room." That was enough for the cops. They turned to the obviously unauthorized visitors. "You will leave now," the senior one ordered, while the junior one kept his hand on his service pistol. "No," was the immediate reply, both from Yang Quan and Yu Fa An. "The doctor has given his order. You must leave," the cop insisted. He was unaccustomed to having ordinary people resist his orders. "You will go now." The doctor figured this was the cue for him to complete his distasteful duty. so that he could go home for the day. He set the stool back up and slid it to where he needed to be.
"You will not do this!"
This time it was Yu, speaking with all the moral authority his education and status could provide.
"Will you get him out of here?"
the doctor growled at the cops, as he slid the stool back in place. Quan was ill-positioned to do anything, standing as he was by his wife's head. To his horror, he saw the doctor lift the syringe and adjust his glasses. Just then his wife, who might as well have been in another city for the past 2 minutes, took a deep breath and pushed.
"Ah,"
the doctor said. The fetus was fully crowned now, and all he had to do was... Reverend Yu had seen as much evil in his life as most clergymen, and they see as much as any seasoned police officer. But to see a human baby murdered before his eyes was just too much. He roughly shoved the junior of the two policemen aside and struck the doctor's head from behind, flinging him to the right and jumping on top of him.
"Getting this?" Barry Wise asked in the corridor.
"Yep," Nichols confirmed. What offended the junior policeman was not the attack on the doctor, but rather the fact that this citizen had laid hands on a uniformed member of the Armed People's Police. Outraged, he drew his pistol from its holster, and what had been a confused situation became a deadly one.
"No!"
shouted Cardinal DeMilo, moving toward the young cop. He turned to see the source of the noise and saw an elderly guai, or foreigner in very strange clothes, moving toward him with a hostile expression. The cop's first response was a blow to the foreigner's face, delivered with his empty left hand. Renato Cardinal DeMilo hadn't been physically struck since his childhood, and the affront to his personhood was all the more offensive for his religious and diplomatic status. And to be struck by this child! He turned back from the force of the blow and pushed the man aside, wanting to go to Yu's aid, and to help him keep this murderous doctor away from the baby about to be born. The doctor was wavering on one foot, holding the syringe up in the air. This the cardinal seized in his hand and hurled against the wall, where it didn't break because it was plastic, but the metal needle bent. Had the police better understood what was happening, or had they merely been better trained, it would have stopped there. But they hadn't, and it didn't. Now the senior cop had his Type 77 pistol out. This he used to club the Italian on the back of the head. But his blow was poorly delivered, and all it managed to do was knock him off balance and split his skin. Now it was Monsignor Shipka's turn. His cardinal, the man whom it was his duty to serve and protect, had been attacked. He was a priest. He couldn't use deadly force. He couldn't attack. But he could defend. That he did, grasping the older officer's gun hand and twisting it up in a safe direction, away from the others in the room. But there it went off, and though the bullet merely flattened out in the concrete ceiling, the noise inside the small room was deafening. The younger policeman suddenly thought that his comrade was under attack. He wheeled and fired, but missed Shepka and struck Cardinal DeMilo in the back. The 30-caliber bullet transited the body back to front, damaging the churchman's spleen. The pain surprised DeMilo, but his eyes were focused on the emerging baby. The crash of the shot had startled Lianhua, and the push that followed was pure reflex. The baby emerged, and would have fallen headfirst to the hard floor but for the extended hands of Reverend Yu, who stopped the fall and probably saved the newborn's life. He was lying on his side, and then he saw that the second shot had gravely wounded his Catholic friend. Holding the baby, he struggled to his feet and looked vengefully at the youthful policeman.